good evening, morning, afternoon, or night, depending on what time you're tuning in, to the next episode of the Pre-Modcast, the number one podcast for fans of pre-modern magic. I'm Mike Harris, joined as always by my co-hosts, Andrew Walker.
Hey, guys.
And Jared Doucette.
Good morning! In that case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Wow, that's funny that...
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder.
I'm stealing your thunder.
I should probably run start running these by you.
Moment of like, oh shit, do I audible to something else?
I did, but I just went with it. Screw it. I haven't seen The Truman Show in a long time, and I just thought of that the other day.
Truman Show is a great movie.
It really is.
I mean...
It's one of those,
you know, Jim Carrey had such a good run there, so.
And it shows that he could be another kind of actor, too, you know? I mean, he did that a few times, but, like, this was one of his, like, more commercial successes with his better acting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And also joining us on this episode, we have a pre-modern Magic tournament winner, Mr. David Daniel.
Hello, everyone.
All right, David's going to be telling us all about his very interesting deck a little bit later. But tell us a little bit about yourself, Dave.
Well, I started playing Magic when I was about 11 years old. I had been playing Pokemon. I was really into it. I was walking to a friend's house, and I found a Mercadian Masks Dark Ritual sitting outside on the floor, just completely...
Rebecca Guay.
It was... And I it had skulls. It had a little ritual going on, and I... I took it to my dad. I was like, this is so cool. And he bought me a pack of 6th edition, and my first rare was a Pentagram of the Ages.
Oh my
strong.
God.
And so I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, the black magic was really calling you with both of those cards.
I played Mono Black for a very long time when I was a kid. So,
Have you played all the way through? Have you? What kind of formats have you played along the way?
I have actually been playing pretty solidly since then. I've been to 5 Pro Tours all around the 2010-2011 time. I had a lot of success with Birthing Pod in both Modern and Standard when it was legal.
That's a very good deck.
Yes, that's a very good card. Hoping it would come off the ban list this last unbanning. But
yeah, I saw that, like, people were really expecting it to get unbanned. Was there any prompting for that? Why did people think it was going to get unbanned?
Because it's the same thing as they want, like, twin unbanned every single, like, you know, ban and restrict list probably announcement also.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just a lot of the cards have, like, the power level of Magic has risen since they banned both those cards, really.
Yeah.
Like, Urza turns all your artifacts into Mox Sapphires, and they still let that card run around. Uro doesn't let mid-range decks keep up with it. Uh-huh. And I think the only thing really keeping it at check at this point is the power level of Renegade Rallier in a deck like that. Because my friend and I were going to try to start a YouTube channel where we test banned cards in the formats that they're banned in to see if they really deserve it.
Right.
Oh, that's cool.
And so, like, I built the pod deck, and I was still crushing just everything, so maybe it should stay on there.
So it's one of those things where it's like, it looks kind of silly now that it's banned, now that the format's changed so much.
Yeah, I think it would be fine. It would absolutely be a tier one deck, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you just said a couple words in basically Qbert language to me. I don't know what Uro or, like, you know, Renegade whatever are, so I'm just going to trust to say that those are good cards. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, we've gone over before the fact that the last year and a half at this point's worth of printings have basically run roughshod over every Eternal format.
Yes.
So it's like, it's ridiculous. It's just ludicrous, some of the things.
But
you
mentioning Birthing Pod, though, like, I definitely played during that time of Birthing Pod. I played a lot of Modern around that time, too. And so I definitely am familiar with those kind of decks. But I think actually Birthing Pod has a good, almost like, stepsister or like older stepsister in the form of like Survival of the Fittest in pre-modern.
I was just gonna say, let's tie this to pre-modern, guys.
Yeah.
Have you played any Survival decks?
I had played Survival when it exploded in Legacy back when people were playing the Vengevine Legacy decks.
Oh, that deck was amazing.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, that whole format was like, what kind of Survival do you want to play? It was kind of ridiculous. Like, there were Welder survival decks, there were like aggro Vengevine survival decks, there were Control survival decks. I almost exclusively play either Tess or Fairies in Legacy. I could not play either of those decks during that time because survival was so oppressive.
Was survival unbanned? Is that why it went nuts, or was it because of Vengevine being printed?
It was because of Vengevine. It just took a really long time for people to figure it out, and I think Caleb Durward actually spiked a GP or something. He top-aided it, and people were like, wait a minute. This is nutty. Like, you can just get all of your Vengevines and then get two Basking Rulaws and just kill somebody.
Exactly. You know, that deck was insane. It was so good. Yeah, I very much remember that.
Yeah.
It was good. But yeah.
Yeah, I know Vintage actually had the birth or rebirth of survival like a couple years ago with the printing of Hollow One.
Yep.
Where it was like this card that nobody's played in Vintage in decades, all of a sudden is a tier one deck.
it's a repeatable tutor. I mean, like, it's just like, it's a very good ability, you know, the survival card.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And we see it a lot in our format. I actually have a friend of mine who's been working on the full English breakfast list and getting a little frustrated with it because it's not an easy deck to play either. You know what I mean? The sequencing is like very, very specific, you know, about which way you discard and everything. So, but it's still very strong to be able to tutor up exactly what you want at any time, you know, which is, especially with Squee, you know, running around and the shapeshifter, you really get to control a lot of it. So,
The thing that's great about survival too, though, is there's just so many different ways to build it.
Yes.
Like, I really love, I've seen the red-green survival deck. Gosh, now it's going to kill me who was playing it, because I want to give them a shout-out. But
Avalanche Riders and Plow Unders and things like that.
Yeah, but also some funky tricks with, like, the plane shift bounce creatures, like the Horned Kavu and the Shivan Worm, and the various Enters the Battlefield triggers.
Okay. Yep.
Like, you could just do some fun shit with that.
Absolutely. So, David, so what got you into pre-modern then?
So, like I said, I was 10 or 11 when I started playing, and like 6th edition, I maybe wasn't the first set, but the first set, like, I actually went to a tournament for, Invasion was legal.
Love Invasion.
So, my favorite card from that set was probably obviously Blazing Spectre.
Yeah.
Like the artwork, just everything about it. Like, I fell in love with that card. So, that's just kind of my childhood. And it was really weird because I called Wizards customer service when I was a kid because, like, I didn't understand what Standard was. And I tried to have him explain it to me. And I was like, okay, I have all these really old white border lands that I digged out of a commons box. Can I use them? And he said specifically, he was like, you can't use cards that aren't from the current environment. And so, like, I didn't have enough basic lands from Invasion to play my deck. So, like, I roll up with this black-red deck with, like, Islands and Forests because I don't have enough cards. And, like, these people at this tournament are like, what is your deck? And I was like, well, this is my first tournament. And I was like a kid. So, like, everybody helped me out. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
That's really funny. That's some pretty poor customer service.
Terrible.
Yeah, like, when I think back on it now, I'm like, that guy just, I don't know. It was very strange. But, so.
It was his first day on the job.
it was probably, like, you know, Gavin Verhey or, what, like, Randy Bueller's first day working there or something. Who knows? It's probably someone we know.
I just picture some guy who doesn't actually know how to play Magic, and, like, you ask him a question, so then he has to, like, look it up.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, it says here that in Standard you can only play it from the set, so that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, it's probably some some guy like that. That's funny.
Some guy from the D&D section. He knows everything about D&D, and just ask him a basic Magic question.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can tell you.
That's actually crazy that Wizards customer service used to be like a phone line where you could call them to ask judge questions. Do you guys remember that?
No, I never did it, but
yeah, I definitely remember that.
Yeah, that was like I mean, this is more in kind of the old school era, but, you know, I'm sure it was done well up through the 90s, where, like, even if you're just playing with your friends kitchen table, like, and you had a question, you could call them.
Good, you should be able to. The game is super complicated.
Yeah, it really is. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm a big fan of there's that, like, judge chat online where there's always, like, X number of judges on this, like, chat. And you can just throw a random question in and they can – they'll answer it within, like, a minute or two. There's, and there's, like, always, like, 50 to 60 people, like, in this judge chat just asking questions to, like – I'm not sure what level the judges are, but they're you know, they're spitting something out and it sounds right. And they, like, they'll bring up their the different interactions and everything, so –
Yeah, that's the beauty of the internet for us nerds. Like,
exactly.
I've literally never had a judge question that I couldn't find the answer to online.
Exactly. It's probably happened before.
Yeah. it's like that old thing of I think it was an XKCD comic where when you find some really obscure problem and it's like someone in 2003 asked this question and there are no responses. What did you see? What happened? Please tell me your story.
Exactly. It's a deep, deep, dark part of the internet.
Yeah.
So. Awesome.
But yes, sorry, we cut you off there. How did you get into pre-modern?
Oh, so yeah, like that's my favorite era. I actually own the entire Invasion block foil.
Oh,
it's really cool. I've had it for a long time now. The cards keep going up, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to keep it. But
yeah, you got to keep that together.
I don't remember how I found it, but someone recommended a Magic group to me and somebody posted, they're like, oh, it's pre-modern. I was like, pre-modern? That sounds like exactly what I want to be playing all the time. I didn't even know what it was at the time, but the name just grabbed me.
Yeah.
It's a good name. It's a pretty good name.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And
it's a fantastic name. I love its relation to modern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like self-explanatory. And I was expecting like old extended back before it didn't rotate. Like Force of Wills and like Dual Lance and all this stuff. And then I saw the ban list. I was like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Just Brainstorm's banned, Force of Will is banned. There's no duels. Like, this is the exact Magic I want to be playing.
I totally agree. Brainstorm and Force of Will Magic is definitely... There's some people who really enjoy it. I don't know if it's for me necessarily, but, you know, it's kind of funny you mention that because I've kind of been digging into this, like, have you heard about Old Frame or Classic that people are really talking about?
Yeah. I'm in that group, too.
Yeah. So I've started kind of looking into it, and like I've never cast a Yawgmoth's Will. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, that'd be kind of fun. You know, I don't know. You know, I have some Force of Wills. I have these things. You know, maybe I want to dip my toe into it to see what it's like. But I'm not gonna break the bank. But I already have a lot of the stuff from old school too. So it's not like I need to. It's a very big investment for me. So. We'll see. But anyway, back to the pre-modern. Like, you know, it definitely is. Like, the ban list really makes it very balanced. I mean, I can't think of anything that I still. I mean, we haven't done a big like kind of show on it, but like I still can't think of anything I'd want to even consider changing, you know, at this point. But
yeah, we've talked about it a number of times, and honestly, I was actually going to ask. You said you were thinking about or actually doing a show where you test out banned cards.
Yes.
Like, have you considered doing that for pre-modern?
I don't know. I kind of like where the banned list is at. A lot of the cards are banned not for their power level, but for the health of the format. Like, Brainstorm and Force of Will have their own. Like, if you want to cast those cards, you can just go play Legacy. You can just go play Vintage.
Yep.
But, like, I want to cast Blazing Specter. Like, people want to cast Pernicious Deed and have it be great.
Yep.
There was a time for a long time I believed that they were going to print Pernicious Deed Modern Horizons, and I was really excited because, the way it's worded, it doesn't interact with Planeswalkers. So, like, you can blow up Pernicious Deed for, like, 7 and not blow up your Jace the Mind Sculptor. It's like, oh, this is going to be so cool. And then
it very specifically says creatures, artifacts, and enchantments, right?
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, this is the perfect card to reprint. And then they didn't. And I was just like, I can't cast this card anywhere. Like, it's not good in Legacy. Like, it's not good in Legacy, but, like, Oko's everywhere now. Just whatever. And, I think the ban list is pretty perfect where it's at. I liked Bargain. I don't think Bargain should have gone, but I'm a combo player, so.
A combo player, that's interesting, you know. I mean, that's definitely the ones you have to worry about the most, though, you know, with the combo decks.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I don't get salty when someone bans one of my cards, because probably usually for a good reason.
Yeah.
I think it's because, like, Bargain was one of those things where you ban that one card and it doesn't really affect, there's not a lot of splash damage to other decks.
Right.
It's like, it is the bargain deck.
Right, that's fair. Yeah.
And it was insanely powerful. Like, I definitely lost a couple of turn threes when I have out, like, a 3-3 at that point.
Right. I'm like, semi-upset about them banning bargain, but if you ask me to come up with an argument for why you shouldn't ban it, I probably couldn't do that.
That's fair. Yeah. That's very fair.
At the same time, though, I agree that, like, it wasn't warping the format, you know? Like, it would probably be fine if bargain was still in. Because it's not like everyone was top eighting with it. It's not like top eights were overrun by it, you know?
Right. But is it a net positive overall or a net negative? You know, is it creating a deck that is too good or something, you know?
Right. Or a deck that's just not fun. I think that's a lot of what the designers who are like making Magic right now are missing. Like, anybody can make a powerful card. Like, Uro is powerful, Oko is powerful, but are they fun? Like, I had a cube for a really long time, and I had like Opposition and a Snaring Bridge in it, and I taught my girlfriend how to play, and she like within a couple weeks she was like, "Why is this card in your cube?" I was like, "What do you mean? This card's amazing." And she's like, "Yeah, it's amazing, but like every time someone plays an Opposition, I stop playing the game." And like it hit me like a brick of like just like a boulder. I was like, "You are totally right."
Yeah. Yep.
Like Opposition, nobody likes playing against these
play
cards.
Against.
Yeah.
That's very true.
And yeah, bargain's just one of those cards. Like I love it, but it's not interactive. Yeah. And like that's the meat of this format. Is like it's interactive, it's fun, and the power level is just it's there and
yep.
It's nice to have.
It's very true where it's almost like there's no tier one deck that doesn't interact well.
Right.
But at the same time, there's no tier one deck that can't be disrupted.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything can be beat.
They all, you know, fight each other really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually, did you guys see Pascal Maynard wrote a little thing? Like, I didn't actually look too deep into it, but I think they're doing Modo pre-modern weeklies now.
Oh yeah, I did see something about this. There was what was that? It's European based. I forget the name of it, but I saw people post about this.
It's a Mythic Society.
Mythic Society.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's an interesting name.
I mean, I've never had Modo even back in the day when I almost started the beta, but was like, I have enough time and money sinks into Magic. I don't need to throw on another one that's going to have me staying up till 2 a.m. every night. Right. But it looks
beta
really
was free.
Neat.
It was to hook you.
Do what?
I need beta was to hook you with all the free booster packs you got, like 3 a day for free, and you could just keep getting all this stuff and trading and stuff. And then when they took it all away and said, okay, now you can pay, you're like, oh, I need me some Magic Online.
Exactly. Some Magic Online. Well, and that was the thing was like, I even knew back then that like it was gonna go to pay, and just the thought of the fact that I would have to buy cards I already own, like that for some reason ticked me off in a way.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean they had the crazy option back then of putting. You could put what if you collected a whole set, they would mail you a set trade in.
Oh, they still do that. That's still a thing.
So,
I did that.
They still do that?
Yeah, I did that twice with Modo. I got like a set of Return to Ravnica and a set of like M10 or M12 or something like that from doing that like back in the day. Yeah. But by the way, so
is that at all worth it? Like
it used to be. A while ago they changed the. You have to pay for like the shipping or whatever. And it used to be $5, and they upped it to $20. Which awkwardly was enough to stop people from doing it. Like the difference between a $20 playset and an $80 playset was enough to
put people off of it. That makes sense.
Okay, so I found.
But anyways, the reason I brought that up not to talk about Modo, but to say it, at the end of Pascal Maynard's little write up, he was like, "There is always the danger in a non-rotating format that it'll become solved." However, pre-modern has been going for years and hasn't yet. And I was thinking, like, and it doesn't seem like it's going to, you know?
Plenty of brew space. So yeah, it's called the Mythic Society, and they're doing pre-modern, and it starts July 22nd. And starting Wednesday next week, July 22nd. Yeah, July 22nd.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's...
So if you're a Moto pre-modern player, check that out.
Absolutely. I saw some people posting about it fairly recently on the pre-modern Facebook page about being on Moto. And I said, you know, go for it. You know what I mean? If people do it, it's not my cup of tea, but, you know, it's on the mythicstore.com. I think it's one of the LGSs or whatever over in Europe. And he posts a bunch of, like, the... you know, common decks, yep. Like, you know, blue, white, you know.
The one benefit that there's always been with Magic Online is just it teaches you your triggers really well.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I learned, like, the combat phase very well from playing Moto. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, when it's like, okay, it's like you would go to combat and the passing of priority. It's like, okay, you declare attackers, you know, you pass priority, you declare blockers, you pass priority. Like, you know, all those steps are really important to learn so you know when in paper magic you can interact. So I think, you know, if you, you know, kind of struggle with those things, like playing Moto will teach you that and you'll learn it pretty well. So I think it's actually a very good tool. And when I played it a lot back around that, like I said, that 2010, 2012 time, I mean, that's where I learned, like, you know, kind of like literally the phases of the game, you know, which and when mana drains and all, mm-hmm. where mana, you know, drains to the pool and stuff like that. So I think that it's a good learning tool.
Yeah. Necessary way to step up your game.
Yeah.
Because, like, you got to know that shit.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So anyway.
So just for a time frame, though, when about was this that you discovered pre-modern? Was it like a year ago, 2 years ago?
It was about a year ago, and okay. I got super excited. I built a bunch of old decks, and nobody in my city really is left that played with me when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
What's your city? Where do you live?
I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And we actually have a lot of really, really high-caliber players here. It's like the density of good players here is kind of ridiculous. But like not a lot of them are really old school, so... I still have a lot of cards, so I just built a gauntlet. Like, I built Fires, I built Psychotog, I built...
nice.
So, my deck, actually, the deck that I won last month with, was a pet deck from Legacy that a friend of mine used to always play when he started playing Magic. Mm-hmm. And, like, we told him about the Insidious Dreams combo, and he was like, that's the best thing I've ever seen. Because, you know, he didn't really know much, and I was like, yeah, just a one-card combo, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, I built this. I built a Mono Black Control, and I just built a whole gauntlet, and I got some of my friends playing with me, and it was pretty cool. And, you know, eventually they lost interest. They started playing EDH, whatever, and I just kind of moved on until I got an invite to, like, this pre-modern monthly, and it wasn't even, mm-hmm. like, last month was the first one I played in, because I didn't even know about it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, welcome aboard. Talk about making a splash.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm obviously just going to play my Draco Brew because it's like, you know, that's my baby.
Deck.
Yeah. Should we just get into the deck now? We just start talking about it?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay. I think we've teased people with it now.
So yeah, so obviously you won it was the June monthly with this kind of Draco Insidious Dreams and was it Erratic Explosion,
Erratic
the combo,
Explosion?
Yeah, Erratic Explosion, kind of the Draco Burst or whatever they called it, kind of combo slash. It's really a machine heady black red deck. It does two things basically, right?
Yeah,
kind of grind both ways. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of the deck because when I saw this deck, what I immediately thought of was the Worlds 2001 champion Tom Vanderlot.
Yep.
Yeah, his machine head deck, which was, you know, won Worlds that year, which had the Blazing Spectres and Duress and, you know, like kind of these like kind of black red mid rangey shell, a little different, obviously, with the better cards we have in the bigger format. But it just that's what I thought of immediately. It's like, oh, it's basically that with a nice little combo finish. So I thought it spoke to me immediately as far as like some cards that I wanted to play with.
Yeah, and his deck, actually, I used to get those little Scry magazines at my local shop, and I used to read them, and, like, I was a kid, so I was super impressionable. And, like, Tom Vanderlucht was winning a lot back then. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Just an unnaturally good Magic player. And I saw his Machine Head deck, and that's, like, that's actually kind of how I found Blazing Spectre, honestly.
Yeah. So he's Dutch, I believe, right? Does that sound right? Dutch?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway.
Yeah, with the van in the middle.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'll just do a quick rundown of the deck, and then we'll kind of break it down. So we start off with Excuse me. Four Lightning Bolts, four Duresses. Kind of just generically good cards. Then you have a creature package of four Mesmeric Fiends. Again, more good to discard. Four Hypnotic Spectres. Discard. And then also four Blazing Spectres, which you're saying are like your kind of pet card, right? And they just, yeah. You know, they just speak to you. We'll get more into those to see if they're actually good enough. I'm not sure, but you know, I do. I mean, I 2/2 haste. I mean, it's got a lot of good things on it, but you know, four mana is a lot. You know, for this format, for a lot of things. Four Dark Rituals to speed everything up. Three Grim Lavamancers. Then you have four Phyrexian Dreams, and I'll say right now, I think this is the best Phyrexian Arena. Excuse me. I think this is the best Phyrexian Arena deck you can kind of make. You know. It's exactly what the deck wants, right? It gets
right.
It's the best thing to ritual out on turn one. You just get it out there and say, let's go. You know what I mean? I'm going to be 2-for-1-ing you every turn, basically. And then also, like, it fills your hand for when you get the what we mentioned earlier, the Insidious Dreams combo, right? So the Insidious Dreams is not a card I don't think everyone knows. It's a 3 and a black instant, which is very important, with an additional cost of discard X cards. But that means you get to search for X cards and then put them on top of your library in any order, right? And then, of course, that works well with the Erratic Explosion, which is basically the first card you kind of search up. And then you put the Draco right underneath it. So you can just go, here, 3 mana, 16 to your face, right? So
yep,
a nice, easy way to kind of backdoor way to win some games. And a very good, you know, kind of mana suite of, because black and red, you know, being the same colors, you know, or paired colors, you know, you got Bloodstained Mire, Sulfur Sprouse. Yeah,
ally colors.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, they work real well. So I love the deck. I think it's awesome. And I'd love to hear, you sounds like you had it kind of brewed up, ready to go, or was it like, you know, something you were working on for a while?
I guess the big question is the chicken or the egg. Was it a machine head deck that you put the Draco Burst combo into, or did you start at Draco Burst?
That's a good question. Yeah, there you go.
So I don't even know that I can answer that question, much like the chicken egg question, because like we've had this deck built for so long, like playing it in Legacy, that I don't remember how it got started. I think my friend really wanted to play an Insidious Dreams deck, but we were pretty young, and I don't think we had Force of Wills, so like we couldn't build him a blue deck. And
right.
So I just put together this like awkward black-red thing for him, and like he really liked Grim Lavamancer too, so it was like, yeah, this deck rules, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that like this configuration of most of these cards has been in my mind for a really long time. The thing that Pre-Modern kind of added, we've never played with a Hypnotic Spectre or a Blazing Spectre in the deck. It was always, I mean, we had better creatures, obviously, in Legacy.
Right.
Like, we would play, like, Tombstalker.
Yeah, and, big boy, yeah.
Yeah. So, when I was putting this together, I had the Dark Rituals and the Arenas and the Insidious Dreams and the Fiends and the Duress and Bolt, obviously, and the Spectres came in after I was goldfishing the deck, and I didn't have anything to do with my Dark Rituals.
Right.
Right.
Like, I was like, okay, I can, like, Dark Ritual in the Phyrexian Arena, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, after I played a couple games against, like, a Blue Eye Control deck that a friend had, I decided, I was like, well, if I'm going first, like, there are only a couple decks that can really deal with Dark Ritual Hypnotic Spectre, and they're all like the mono red decks that play Bolt and the blue eye control decks that play Swords.
So that's very important. Just let me jump in there a second. There's very few decks that just play Bolt. You know what I mean? It's literally just like the red deck and then this one that just like plays Bolt for it just being a good card. You know, it's just it's not just like splash in like other formats. You know, you just throw Bolt in because it's just literally still like one of the most efficient cards ever printed. You know, but there's not many like decks that just play Lightning Bolt or it's just, I mean, Swords are running around quite a bit. You know, in other decks, but like, you know, it's just very unlikely that, you know, this Spectre is probably going to get in and get a couple hits in, you know? You know, if you
and he,
it's pretty safe.
He almost always did. I'm trying to remember the number of times my Hypnotic Spectre actually died before my opponent did, and it's not very many.
Right, it's really not. Wow. There's less lightning bolts running around than you think, and it makes it that first turn hippie all the more appealing.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's like we're all old school players, so we think of that all the time. Like, yep, Hippie dies to Bolt. Yeah, just... but in this format, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Right. So, I had a lot of questions. Like, a bunch of people, like, PM'd me over Facebook, asked me questions and stuff. And a couple guys sent me their lists of things that were kind of close. And they were playing things like Terminate and Flame Tongue Kavu and all of these really creature-specific removal spells. And I, you know, I was telling them, you are only half of an aggro deck.
Right.
Like, this deck is mutable to pretty much any role that you need it to play. Like, you can play a control game, you can play an aggro game, and there is just a one-card combo in your deck. Insidious Dreams, like... I might have to go back on the thing, you know, is there a card worthy of banning in pre-modern? If there is, I think it might be Insidious Dreams, and I don't think people have explored this. I don't think people have explored this card enough, because it's literally a one-card combo that costs you two slots in your deck, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's really true.
Like, it does not cost very much. That way.
And the number of people I killed, like, I just duress them, Mesmeric Fiend them, like, play Hypnotic Spectre, and they're already so far behind in that game, depending on what deck they're playing, that I almost don't need the combo, but if I have it, they're just dead. Mm-hmm. Like, the game is absolutely over, because I've already ripped your hand apart. You're just going to take 16 damage, and you don't even need to do it on turn 4. There were plenty of games where I had a Phyrexian Arena in play that they would be, you know, above 16 life, but the reason Arena is really good is because when you Insidious Dreams with Arena in play, you have to Dreams for one more. Which means you can get one more card.
Which is Bolt.
Yeah, which is almost always Bolt. So you can, like, 19 somebody. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I actually I actually built this deck and started playing around with it. I made a couple of my, you know, tweaks that I saw, but, and we'll get into those later.
Took out Blazing Spectre.
Yeah. I like to be a little faster. But anyway, but, like, you know, but I also felt like another, you know, kind of, if you're playing against, like, a, say it's game one, and you know they're like a counterspell deck, you can, and you get that, and you resolve that Dreams, let's say, if they let you resolve it somehow, you know what I mean? But, like, you can always, like, also get, like, Duress to make sure the coast is clear or something like that, make sure they're not going to do something to respond to your combo, you know what I mean? So, like, you can get Duress, play that, because you're going to have the 4 mana, because the Erratic Explosion only costs 3, and so you know, Duress or Bolt first, and then you can go for the Explosion, you know, and there you go. It's either 19 or you protected your one card combo.
Yeah, and there was another game that I even, like, I turned one Dark Ritual Arena'd, and I couldn't draw a third land to save my life, but I, like, found another Dark Ritual. So at the end of his turn, I, like, Dark Ritualed Insidious Dreams for a land, the Erratic Explosion, and the Draco, and perfect. Just, like, untap, drew the two cards and, like, Explosion. He was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's just like,
so I'm guessing since you did pretty well, you didn't run into having your Insidious Dreams countered too often.
I played against one counterspell deck, I believe, and think he was on Stasis.
Uh-huh.
That helps.
Which,
jeez. Of all the counterspells.
Very, very bad for him, yeah.
Wow. I mean, but like, in theory, like, you know, they shouldn't have much of a hand between the Duress, the Fiends, the Spectres, and the 8 Spectres. You know, you're whittling their hand away. Just pick it apart.
And not only that, it's an instant, so you wait till they tap out.
Right. Tap out. I mean, there's a lot of free counterspells in this format, but
yeah. Well, not many people are, I mean, there's definitely the dazes and the foils, but it's not like it's force of will, you know what I mean? You have to be very specific in a deck that has, and when you're committing to foil and daze specifically, or, you know, to be able to do that. Uh-huh. So it's very specific decks.
Yeah. And I was actually expecting a lot more counterspell decks, so I, like, packed 4 Pyroblast in my sideboard and 4 Phyrexian Negators for, like, the blue-eye control decks that couldn't really punish me for just turn 1 negating them, but I didn't really run into them.
I don't think those are really wasted sideboard slots in necessarily, so.
No, I'm honestly surprised that you only ran into one, because I feel like I play against blue decks all the time.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, there's variance in who you show up against too. You know, I mean, in tournaments. You know,
yeah, for sure.
So, we'll just do
it. But yeah, I don't think your deck is weak to it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I think with all the discard, like, especially the targeted discard, you have great ways of getting around the counters.
Unless you get good information from your opponent's hand, which is important.
Yeah, that's a lot of, like, so I play black-green Rock exclusively in Modern because I'm just like, I've been a Thoughtseize player at heart pretty much my whole life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I play a lot of combo decks, but most of those combo decks also have Thoughtseize, so.
It's perfect for
but
that.
It kind of lets you, yeah, like it lets you sculpt the game kind of the way you want it to be played.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people cast Thoughtseize and Duress the wrong way. They're just like, oh, well, that's your best card. I'm going to take it. I don't think they take their game plan into consideration. And especially for this deck, like, Duress is so good. Duress on turn one is so good.
Yep.
Because your deck can do everything. So, yeah.
See, Jared, didn't you say recently that you think Duress is the best card in the format?
Oh, yeah, constantly. I totally believe it's the best card in the format. I'm pretty sure I say it at least half the episodes on the show.
I can't even think of an argument.
One mana, you get the information, you take pretty much the best card out of their hand. I mean, it's live against almost every deck, except for literally like goblins, you know, which doesn't play any like.
Right.
You know, it's the only deck it's really going to be dead against, and it's just like you said, it's you can sculpt the game from what you learn and what you've just taken away from them, and it's almost always a mana advantage because you're spending one mana to take what could be their 3-4 mana spell. That could be their combo, and they're just like, well, I guess I've got nothing to do now, you know? I love it.
Yeah.
I love the card.
Yeah, like you're taking something insanely powerful for what you're putting in.
Right. And then you just see, like, what you talked about, basically, it's newer sibling who's better is the Thoughtseize, you know, which is just for basically a straight upgrade. Who cares about the 2 life if you literally can put any card other than a land, you know?
Thoughtseize is the craziest card. I can't even... Yeah. I don't even want to get into that. Thoughtseize was absolutely a mistake on every level, but I am so glad it exists.
Yeah.
Because Duress was a perfectly fine card. And Cabal Therapy is a perfectly fine card, you know? And it's just that
Yeah,
step
I
up.
Think the pre-modern ones are really balanced.
Super.
And Thoughtseize is not.
Yeah.
Thoughtseize is just, there's no thinking to it. It's just, as far as like putting it in your deck or not, you know, it's just goes in. Right.
Yeah, well, it's a good point, tying back to what you said earlier about people including Terminate and Flame Tongue Kavu, and I'm a huge fan of Flame Tongue Kavu. I played it all the time back in the day, but there's a lot of decks that are creatureless.
Yeah,
and that's you really don't want a dead card.
That was part of my reason for the inclusion of the Blazing Spectres, because I had 2 Flame Tongues, and I just... Like, I never casted them. Most of what the action they got was me flame-tonguing my Mesmeric Fiend to give them a slightly dead card so I could attack for 4.
Yeah, I don't think flame-tongue is the main deckable card in pre-modern at all.
Yeah, it's just, I agree.
Even though it's very nostalgic for all of us, especially when you're talking the invasion block, which was very core to my, you know, magical childhood, if you will. but, like, you know, that was just, it was the best card. It was the best creature in standard. For the two years it was around, you know, but it's just in this format. A, there's too many combo decks that are faster than it, and B, there's, other than what are you really getting value against with a FTK? You know, you hope to get like a Ravenous Bailoff or Wall of Roots. You know, I'm not sure if it's really worth it. You know,
yeah, I feel like most of the time you're probably taking out like a 1/1.
Yeah, you're not getting the full value at it, and then the 4/2 beater's fine, but. But it's the fact that it's not a May trigger makes it really a liability because sometimes if you just want to put pressure on, you have to kill itself, you know, if you don't have anything else on the board, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's interesting. But yeah, I don't think FTK deserves to be in this deck at all. But I was curious to hear what you said about Terminate. Like, that's a card that just for me just is super nostalgic and everything. But it also, like, you know, it's just so efficient too. You know, two mana and the red and the black. It's not going to be hard to do with this mana base. So. I was wondering, like, you just because it's a dead card against some decks, it's just not even worth the inclusion. That's basically it.
It is super efficient. There are not many creatures you really care about in this deck. Like your Spectres fly.
Yeah, that's huge.
Grim Lavamancer is kind of on like cleanup duty for like I played against a Sly deck, and like he just couldn't cast his Ball Lightning into my Grim Lavamancer.
Yep.
Like, I knew we had him, too. He had, like, 4 cards, and he just said go. I was like, those are either all Fire Blasts or...
all Ball Lightnings. Yeah.
Or they're all Ball Lightning. But it doesn't... either way, it doesn't matter. Like, he can't do anything on this board. So Grim Lavamancer, like, doesn't need to be in combat. Mesmeric Fiend is really just Duress's 5-8.
Exactly, yeah.
So, like, I would be playing Terminate against Reanimator, maybe? And even Reanimator,
the Chroma.
Andrew and I played up a couple games where he put a Phantom Neshoba into play, and I'm able to kill people through Phantom Neshoba. Mm-hmm. It's not... Neshoba's a bad example. Like, I...
it doesn't die.
Yeah, like, Verdant Force is too slow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vesara doesn't matter. Just, nope. Like, all of these creatures you don't really care about.
And Terminate can't kill a Chroma anyway, so...
Right, yeah. I did get killed by an Chroma. By Jens Jaeger, who has beat me twice now. He beat me last month, and he beat me this month.
Oh, wow. You've only been doing it for 2 months, and you already got a rival.
Yep. Yeah. He just crushed me twice. But his deck is very good, and he's a really good player, so I'm not
good.
Not salty at all. I'll get you one of these days.
Do you ultimately feel like the Blazing Spectre as a 4-of was the right call?
For that tournament, I absolutely believe so. The reason I think it is okay in this deck, a lot of people have been like, how do you feel about the Blazing Spectres? Well, I think it's too much, blah, blah, blah. It gives you another really good Dark Ritual play, and it is the same as Hypnotic Spectre on turn 2.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, like, if you go Dark Ritual Hippie, you're attacking on turn 2. If you go land, Dark Ritual Blazing Spectre attack, I mean, sure, they get to choose the card, but it's still a lot of pressure for most decks.
I could see
and,
that.
Like, if I could play 4 more Hypnotic Spectres, I would.
Uh-huh.
But that was the...
I think, most people would.
Yeah, of course.
It's interesting just because what sticks out to me about Blazing Spectre is it was super popular when Invasion first came out, like for those couple of months when people were still kind of figuring out Invasion.
Right.
Because, of, like you said, the Tom Vandalote Machine Head deck was like insanely good. And it was almost like it was the poster child for the black-red combo, the combination of colors in that era.
It absolutely was.
But I feel like it just kind of fell by the wayside as Machine Head fell by the wayside because, like, Fires at the time was so much better.
Yeah.
And just other decks like Counter Rebels took over. It just kind of, you know.
You're right with those decks. The Fires decks was just faster, and it hit harder on turn 4, and it was able to ramp with the birds and Land of Worlds or whatever. They're in that standard for sure.
Yeah,
and they picked up the Fires deck, like, picked up Shivan Worm and Plane Shift, and, like, Apocalypse came out, and all hell broke loose because that set was so good.
Yeah, that set's awesome.
That set was insane.
And we got the enemy-colored Painlands, which was awesome. You know, that was a big deal back then for sure. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, just that whole Invasion block. That was kind of the block where I feel like I went from being a scrub to being an actual competitive player.
Yeah, know what you're doing.
So I'm very fond of Invasion
block. Probably mine too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, because it was also like, wasn't that the first block that Randy Bueller was head designer of?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
I remember him saying something like that on like a All Things Considered or something like that.
I can't remember.
Because, you know, there was the obvious trend where it became more creature based and less like control based because everybody knows that Urza's Saga and even into Mercadian Mass with the free counters, like blue was just the dominant force in Magic for years.
Yeah.
And really... It feels like Invasion was when they started dialing that back and kind of letting a deck like Fires become
powerful. Well, they pushed the creatures more. You could tell. Like, I remember seeing Spiritmonger and being like, what? It's a 6/6 for 5? And it has...
Yeah, Spiritmonger felt like a misprint.
No, it really did. Because it was already above curve. Like, this is my 16-year-old self, and I figured this out. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like, it was a 6/6 for 5, which was above curve. It had 3 positive abilities. You know, the regeneration obviously being the better. No drawbacks, except for the 2-color requirement, right? So it had 3 abilities that were all positive for the most part. And they were all, I mean, semi-relevant, you know, especially in that time, you know. So it was...
Yeah, I mean, remember how it was like for years and years and years, they were basically printing Urnum replacements.
Right.
Yep.
Where it was like 4 mana for a 4/5 with a drawback, and usually the drawback was fucking awful.
Yeah, terrible.
And so then all of a sudden, like Spiritmonger comes out, and it's like, what am I missing? Like what did they not include that was supposed to be the drawback?
Right. I mean, yeah, it was definitely around that. I mean, eventually they gave up and just printed Urnum again in like Judgment or something like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. But what's kind of interesting, I think they discovered with Invasion Block and Apocalypse, was that's not that bad. You know, creatures can get more powerful and the game is still insanely fun.
Yeah, and I think they've learned that like people like that kind of magic. You know, it's interactive.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the whole wizarding kind of, like, I got orcs and monsters and beasts and, you know, all this stuff. Like, it definitely fills into the kind of the, what's the word, mythos of the game, like, mm-hmm. as far as like, you know, yeah. what's going on. So
and
yeah, oh. it's like if you're a Timmy at heart and then you start playing more competitively, like, you want to be able to play creatures again. Yeah. But there was kind of this thing like before Invasion Block where it was like, if you're gonna get good, you have to start playing control and combo.
Yeah,
like, you're not gonna win with creature decks.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. for sure.
I think a lot of the reason that Invasion was so, like, that power creep was acceptable was because the removal got a lot better, too. And,
yeah.
like, Terminate was in Plane Shift, and Terminate was crazy. I remember, like, Terminate just kills anything. It just kills a Spiritmonger. Like, pay your 5 mana. I don't care.
Right.
I'm just going to Terminate
it. Yeah,
unheard
of.
And then the next, yeah, that was in Plane Shift, and then Apocalypse was Vindicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Vindicate, and we had really good finishers in that set too, like Desolation Angel. Like, you yep. just build up to a Desolation Angel, crush your opponent's mana base. Like, mm-hmm. there was a lot of good ideas back then. That's kind of what Magic now, like, the designers of Magic now are missing.
Right.
I think that Planeswalkers ruined Magic.
I have heard people say similar, and I agree, like, completely.
It's just like, they're just creature. They're just like Flame Tongue Kavus that just stay in play, and 90% of the move in the game don't target them. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And like, I've obviously been playing Magic, you know, really heavily for the last 10 years. I've been going to Grand Prix and like doing Star City. I went to Turtle Weekend last year, and it's just like, the more I think about it, it's just like,
Hello?
When we thought Flame Tongue Kavu was really Hello? Good. That's the kind of power level that Planeswalkers are at plus 100, and so they can't keep up. Like, the removal spells can't keep up. Like, you can't print Terminate that also targets Planeswalkers, because that's just absolutely too good.
Well, they did. They printed Dreadbore. Wasn't that a card? It was Sorcery Speed?
Yeah, it was Sorcery Speed, which is
yeah.
kind of bleh. But, like, the creatures got a lot better, too. Like, Uro and just, like, the creatures are so good now that there's like no removal that is good enough anymore. Maybe Lightning
yeah.
Bolt. They should
no,
just reprint
it's very
Bolt.
True. Constantly. Yeah, no, I mean, it feels silly now how insanely good the creatures are. Like, something that in old school or pre-modern would be completely format warping is, you know, like a good draft yeah. card now.
Right.
But it doesn't see play even, because everything else is so much better.
Like, I just learned
yeah.
about this
and
card.
It feels
good. Yeah, I was just saying, I just learned about this card. It probably is nothing card, but it blew my mind. Like, Elfish Reclamationist or something like that. It's a 1 mana 1/2 that, like, if you have three lands in your graveyard, it becomes a 3/4. So automatically, yeah. like, it's above. And then it also has ability where you tap two to tap it, and you can, you know, sack a land to get a land. And I was like, so this is just a 1 mana version of, like, you know, Knight of the Reliquary, which was like one of my favorite cards from, like, back in like early modern, late extended days. And it's just like, this would be amazing, you know, just like fixes your mana and, you know, gets bigger, like it scales up as the game goes along. Like, this is amazing, you know.
Yeah, Turbo Depths in Legacy picked that card up real
yeah.
quick, but
yeah.
exactly, it's weird, like
crop rotation on a stick.
Exactly.
Yeah, basically. I was gonna say, it's weird looking at creatures now, because I still look at Spiritmonger and I still think it's good.
Oh,
and
yeah.
like, people think I'm crazy, But like, just I'm just like, you don't know. You're too young to understand how good this card is. And they're like, oh, just cast Questing Beast. I'm like, slap your Questing Beast. Spiritmonger talks to me like that. Talk about a Spiritmonger like that.
Wait, Questing Beast just have so much text on it. Like, it's like...
I punt so many games on Arena to Questing Beast because I can't read it enough times to remember all of the text. it's ridiculous.
Well, it's also insane just the difference between Masks block and Invasion block, where like probably the biggest creature to come out of Masks block was Chimeric Idol, like a 3/3 for 3 that you had to tap all your lands.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know, man. Blastoderm might have something to say about that.
That's true.
Oh, that's true. Blastoderm. No, but
Chimeric Idol was everywhere. I mean, it was a.
But it was because it was colorless. It was played in like everything.
I mean, that's true.
It does.
And then the what it makes me think of is just reading through the spoiler for Invasion. It was like, everything here is so much better. Every creature, you know?
But, like, Chimeric Idol also could get away from being a 3/3 for 3 because there's no bolt in that format. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, you know, this is
there's no bolt. Well, and it dodged
Sorcerer's
Wrath, which was the big
exactly.
Thing. Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
But the point being, like, nowadays, you know, you'd be like, what else does it do?
Just looking underneath the card for more text. What is this?
Yeah, I don't understand. So you're saying I can have a competitive deck with this in it?
Yeah, I remember this was at like the old school Players Ball in 2018. And there was a guy that I know who moved out to the Midwest. And he brought along one of, like, he used to live in Boston with me. And we used to have like this like little play group. And we used to cube and stuff together. And he brought one of our other friends who's like a little bit of a spike, and he plays in the, like, kind of at the time he was still playing actively on, like, you know, grinding GPs and stuff like that. And he came and like saw the cards we're playing with, and he's like laughing. He's like, "You guys are playing with a Cation Jabin Lanier, and the best it's like and the best card you can use to draw cards, it costs 4 mana and then 4 more mana in Jam Day Tome." I was like, yeah, it's awesome. It's one of the best cards in the format.
Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun doing it.
It's just like, but like at the same time, you go to pre-modern, it's still like, it's not that, like, compared to nowadays, it's like, it's not that much better. You know, it's definitely a step up with creatures, but it's just kind of funny.
You pay 2 for a bear. Just, what's it do? Like, laugh. It's a bear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 2/2.
Yeah, it's a 2/2.
It's good. It has a downside. It's called Iron Claw Orcs. It still does damage.
But you'll play it in your Goblins deck because it's the only 2/2 for 2.
Exactly. But yeah, But luckily in pre-modern we have a couple different cards to add. But I will say there's a dearth of good two drops that are Goblins other than the Pile Driver. Right. Yeah, the next ones are pretty awful. Like, there's literally 2/2 for 2 that when it dies, you have to sack a land. Like, there's still, like, a big downside for being a 2/2 for 2 goblin. Yeah. But anyway.
So, back to the deck a little bit. I still find it crazy that you only have one copy of the combo. And Insidious Dreams is your way to do that. Like, did it ever fizzle?
I drew Draco once in the round robin portion, and I drew it once in top 8. And the once in top 8 was actually on camera, and it was really awkward because my opponent Cabal Therapied me. He knew 2 of my cards. He knew Insidious Dreams and my Blazing Spectre. And he sat there for a while, and I, like, my hidden card was Draco. So, like, he doesn't know that I can't combo him. So I'm like, please just name Insidious Dreams. So he thinks for a while, and he's like, Insidious Dreams. So I flip over my Draco, and he's like, oh, I meant to say Blazing Spectre. And I was like, well, I kind of flipped over my Draco. And he's like, well, no, I have this duress for Insidious Dreams. And he, like, throws a duress out and taps the swamp. I was like, all right, yeah, I don't care. threw my 2 cards in the graveyard.
I actually just watched that match, and I remember seeing that part. I was like, wait, what just happened there? Like, what? Like, he definitely said this and that. I just watched it the other night, and I was like, oh, that looked a little weird, but you know, but people screw up Cabal Therapy all the time. You have to make sure with the Cabal Therapy is that you announce the spell and target the player, and then you have to wait for them to say, you know, okay, it resolves. Mm-hmm. And then you announce what card you're going for. Like, it's very specific how you do that. Because if you just say, like, Cabal Therapy, your mana leak, okay, like, then I won't counter the spell and waste the mana or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, you have to make sure it resolves, you know? So that's just a little, you know, the more you know, going across the rainbow. But
so, like when that does kind of happen where you draw the Draco and or for whatever reason don't have access to the combo, did that ever come up and you were able to just win with Spectres?
I believe I won the game in round robin that I drew it. I don't believe I won the game in top eight. And honestly, the risk is so little that I don't really mind it. Like, I play a lot of terrible high-risk combo decks, and you should see the ridiculous thing I'm playing this. I'm 0-2 this month because I'm playing just the worst deck you've ever seen. But there are actual there are no win conditions in my main deck in the deck I'm playing this month.
But, I was gonna say, I think you and Andrew can have a nice discussion.
Oh, Andrew's seen my deck, actually. We have played. But
he gave you some advice, like throw a worthy cause in it.
When you have room, put in moments peace. It pisses off everybody.
But it does piss people off. You definitely have pissed me off a couple times with it.
But drawing Draco is basically the end of the world. It, like, you're still an aggro deck, kind of.
and you know, like, sometimes you don't draw the dreams. Like, how often would you say you win without the combo? Like, how often do you not need it?
Not terribly often. So the round robin portion for me was really weird because we had four players that all went 3-2.
Yeah, that was Paul. I remember that. Uh-huh. And it was, the tiebreakers were so tight.
Yeah,
it was crazy. I only won that pot by like 0.2% or something. But every single one of the games I won, I believe I Draco blasted everybody every game.
Oh wow!
So
yeah, I would imagine so. Just because, like yeah, you're an aggro deck, but you've got like 2/2s are your top end.
Right, exactly.
And you got the Lavamancers, which are kind of a 2/2, but even so, like, and then you can bolt them, and you have two factories, which are also 2/2s, but you're not going to be, you know, taking huge chunks out of people's life unless you're taking the hugest chunk out of people's life.
But this is, like, and we saw, like, Brian Manilakis won back in October with a very much a similar, like, kind of chip damage-y red-black deck, you know? It gets there.
True, but the rack was huge.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's a great clock, no doubt about it, and harder to interact with. But still, like, these decks do win. I mean, Mistress Factory is still a very good card. You know, just the Hypnotic Spectre is a good card. Lavamancer's bolts. The rest is, like, these are all, like, individually good cards that, you know, and then when you can just, you know, Draco blast somebody for the win, you know, once they get in range, it's great. So
I think in the round robin portion, I also had the element of surprise. Almost every one of my opponents had to, like, look up Insidious Dreams or, like, have me tell them what it did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I didn't have that luxury in top eight because, A, everybody had my list.
Yeah.
B, because I went 3-2, I was literally the last seed in the top 16.
Yeah.
I never went first. Mm-hmm. So, like, they just, like, had more time to set up for, you know, my Insidious Dreams or whatever I was going to try to do. So I would say I probably only Draco blasted my opponents about 40% of the time in the entire top 16.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I watched the top eight and the top four match, and you didn't Draco blast in either of those that you won. It was against the Rock and then another one against the Fluctuator deck. I forget the other deck you beat, but it was you just kind of like beat.
You would think I could remember.
Yeah.
What did he play?
I can't remember. But so we talked about with Draco getting stuck in your hand, and I was wondering if I was kind of tossing this around with the guys I play with. I was wondering if maybe sneaking in like a scroll rack makes sense to like kind of protect.
Somebody mentioned that to me as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's great, but I mean, it's a way to put the Draco back on top, right? If you could still see these streams for two, you get the scroll rack and then like the erratic explosion, and you could, if you have enough mana, if you have six mana or whatever, which is unlikely, but like, you know, you could still do it in the same turn in theory.
I mean,
I don't believe so, and I had explained it to the other person who, you know, PM'd me and asked me the same thing. So for that to work, you would either A, have to play enough scroll racks that you would have one whenever you drew your one Draco, or B, play one scroll rack and hope you draw the scroll rack the exact games you draw the Draco.
But if you have six mana, though, say if you Insidious Dreams and in a turn, you can get the scroll rack on top, and then you can... So you put the scroll rack on top, you draw that for turn, let's say, and then you can cast the scroll rack, use it, put the Draco back in, put the erratic explosion in your hand, and then you could still do it. It costs six mana, but it's still doable in the same turn.
Right. I suppose it's doable.
Because it's searchable.
The deck isn't... Yeah. The deck, I don't think the deck is that reliant on the combo. Like, okay. It's probably worth playing one over a Blazing Spectre, obviously. Right. the most... I'm not going to lie, it is the most cuttable card in the deck. By a lot, like every other slot, I look at the cards. I'm like, I'm not cutting any of these. That's insane.
Yeah. No, the rest looks very tight.
I was gonna say, I just looked over the whole tournament. You played 18 games, and you said you only got stuck with the Draco in your hand twice. So one just in nine, twice. So 11% chance.
I only lost one of those games.
You only have one. In your deck, it's not.
That's where it's sort of the question: do you want to take up a slot for scroll rack, where it might just be easier to put something more effective in there, other than just that? Especially if you're blowing your cards fast. I mean, most of the time, even with the arena, you're probably have a grip of like six or seven the whole time. You're aggressively attacking and making discard and everything else. So it's. The rack becomes less effective when you're only being able to rack for like two or three cards.
Also, my land count is really low. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I had six lands in play.
Is it 22 or 23, I think, the land count?
It's 22.
Okay, it's pretty tight. So, I mean, you said the most cuttable card was the Blazing Spectre, but I think there's one other that is probably much more cuttable, and that's the Urborg Volcano, which is...
Don't even get me started about Urborg Volcano. God.
Just
somebody's like, what's the worst card in your deck? And I was like, I'm going to tear every Urborg Volcano in my deck in half.
Did you?
It's so bad.
Like, you never needed that fix.
No, ever. Ever. It was miserable. I drew it against the Stasis deck, and I almost fell out of my chair.
But, like, I mean, there's just a better card in Tainted Peak, right? It's just, like, it's probably just, like, straight up better. Which is just, like, one of those...
Like 10 swamps.
Two petals, or...
I think it's enough.
Yeah, you've got functionally 10 swamps. I think Tainted Peak...
I'd say, like, two of them. I wouldn't play all four, I don't think. But, like, maybe a couple of them.
Yeah, maybe two up.
No, you're definitely right. Tainted Peak is, I don't know, man. I didn't think about it.
Over Urborg Volcano, for sure.
Yeah, that card's the worst. Do not play that card.
A couple of the cards I was just wanted to ask you about for the deck. Did you ever need like a Wasteland? Did you ever think you needed a couple Wastelands or something? Just kind of take care of
It would probably go on the factory slot, and I'd rather have the factories.
I agree. You need to get that at least that first four damage in somehow, so...
Good
point.
There were a couple games I just went turn one factory when I was on the play, and I just like play a land, beat for two, and then they'd like crack a fetch land. Yeah. Like, all right, we're almost there.
Exactly, you're almost in range.
And yeah,
stay on target. Yeah.
So, yeah, there was never a time when I like thought maybe against Stasis, a Wasteland at Forsaken City. But
right. So you say the Grim Lavamancers were actually very good. The Mesmeric Fiends were basically more duresses. We talked about FTK. What about you know, I guess like another aggro deck, it's like a Festering Goblin even worth it? Like something like quick and easy like that, or just Bolt takes care of whatever you're really worried about on turn one, if you need to.
Yeah, Bolt serves so many purposes in this deck. Oh, yeah. I think before Festering Goblin, I'd probably play Firebolt, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that.
I was going to say, I saw the two in the board. Like, how often did those come in?
Not terribly.
Just against aggro decks?
Yeah, I honestly didn't sideboard that much in the whole tournament. Like, I brought in negators against some people that I thought couldn't deal with them. The list you guys are looking at has two erratic explosions in the sideboard. Those are actually supposed to be overloads.
Yeah, no, I knew that. Gotcha. Which are, I think overload's a nice little card to just kind of pick off some artifact.
Because the art looks so similar.
That'd be my
guess. Yeah, and I brought in the overloads the most, probably.
What are you most worried about with overload with this deck? Just like, you know, there are curse scrolls. There are, you know, those kind of like, you know, not even null rods, but like just some other, like, you know, they're all decently like, you know, one to two mana artifacts. Powder Keg.
Yeah, it was just like a catch-all kind of thing. Yeah. Curse Scrolls again, like in mono red.
Yeah.
I didn't
Dreadnought.
Dreadnought, obviously.
Oh, God, Dreadnought. Did not run into a Stifle on that deck, but he probably would have killed me if I did.
Yeah, I'm a big
fan. I honestly kind of scrabbled the sideboard together pretty late. I didn't. Like, I had the main board together, and then they were like, this tournament's starting, and like my three Phyrexian Arenas hadn't shown up in the mail, so I was like playing with proxies, and it was super weird. Everybody was really cool about it.
Yeah, that happens to all of us, I think.
Yeah,
I think
especially in COVID era. It's like, I've definitely had people come and ask me, like, dude, I don't, just show me you've got the cards coming, and it's all good, because what you gonna do if Troll and Toad, or Card Kingdom, or any of the other services or backlogged, it's like, you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hope they're not listening to this, because I definitely ordered three Conspiracy Phyrexian Arenas, so I apologize.
Shame!
But, and then I see a Persecute in the board, and that just seems like another good catch-all discard spell, if it resolves.
Honestly, I had ordered that. I have a foil 7th one, and I wanted to use it.
That's
no other reason. Literally no other reason.
The foil black border.
That's fair. I mean, Engineered Plague is a good card, obviously. Very useful against many decks. You know, especially, you know the goblins which are around, elves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, elves was my big concern. I actually forgot about goblins, but I mean, I'm glad I put them in there.
I played against a cleric's deck today that I was like, oh, I would have liked Engineered Plague against them. Yeah, everything just dies, sure. But there are little, like, you know, kind of, you know, fringe benefits of the, especially with Dark Ritual, you know, be able to pop that out turn one, or, you know, on the draw turn turn one is very important. So,
Yeah, my deck has a lot of ways to deal with turn one Lackey, which I didn't actually think about until I started playing. I was like, what if somebody just, like, turn one Goblin Lackey and Lackeys me? I looked at my deck, I was like, oh, this is actually fine.
You're fine.
Bolt, Lava Mancer, Firebolt, you know.
Big advantage to having four bolts.
Yeah, you're fine. Cool.
It's something I tell people when they're first getting into the format. Like, if you want your deck to be good, just make sure you can handle a turn one Lackey.
Yeah.
And, like, you'd be surprised how many people go, oh, I didn't even think about that, and I don't have a way.
Yeah, just, you know what doesn't kill turn one Goblin Lackey is Urborg Volcano. Keep that in mind.
Well, neither does Tainted Peak, I guess. So, I mean, there we go.
That's true.
So, they're about even in that regard.
You know what's worse than one turn one Goblin Lackey? Turn two Goblin Lackeys. I was like, fucker! Killed the first one, and then two show
after
up.
You killed
after I killed the first one, then he was like two and three. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
and they still have the siege gang.
Yeah,
they always have a siege
gang. Always. And the driver, siege gang and a war chief.
Yeah, and a pile driver. Yeah.
What go ahead.
Any matchups that were particularly stick out to you that were cool or fun?
I don't know how many of you have played against Jens Jaeger again, but his deck is really cool. It is really, really cool. I don't know if I can spoil it on here. He's still playing in the monthly. He played it last month too, so maybe I can. And I apologize if he gets upset.
Did he top 8? Like, was his deck list posted last month?
No. He was in my pod, so he did not make top 16.
In that case, maybe we should.
Yeah, we don't want to blow up his spot.
I'm very interested to know, because you know he's a deck builder after my own heart. Because he did the blue white Stifle Knot.
Ooh.
That really spoke to me.
No, I was really hoping he'd get it this month, but there's a mono red player in our pod that's like 3-0 or 4-0, but his deck is crazy good. I really like the Fluctuator deck, but I think a lot of people who played against him did not know how to play against his deck, and I actually built that deck a long time ago out of a commons box.
Oh, wow.
That I just, like, didn't show up with a deck, and I was like, oh, well, do you have four Fluctuators? And I just found a bunch of bloated toads and crap and built it. So,
yeah.
Like, we were talking a lot before the finals match, and I was like, I have actually done the math on how many cards you need to win, and you're not going to have them.
Yeah, a lot of times what happens with Fluctuator is they go off first game, and then I know this was my story the first time I played it. You figure out their game plan because you didn't know it.
Right.
But now most people know the Fluxrayer game plan. And then the next two games, you're able to fight that game plan now that you know what it is.
And having access to his list was huge. Like,
yeah.
I knew I couldn't win if I just got his Haunting Misery because he also had Living Death. And I don't know.
Yeah, and also that deck, like, so many hate cards that are in every deck fight it, like the Tormod's Crypts and any counter, like, once you know what to counter, any misdirection sort of spell. Like, there's just so many things that can fight Fluxrayer. It's such a fragile combo.
Yeah.
It was. I was really impressed that he made it to the finals, though. My friend was in his pod, and he couldn't describe to me how he killed him, because he doesn't know a lot of these cards. He's like, he cycled all of his cards. I was like, okay, he's playing Fluctuator. How did he kill you? He's like, I don't know, something he dealt damage with his graveyard. I was like,
it's a black card.
Sounds like Haunting Misery, but I don't actually know. And then he made top 16. I was like, okay, yeah, he's playing Fluctuator.
Yeah, so you can check out the deck.
It's really funny. It's really funny how we have such like an encyclopedic knowledge of all these random magic cards. That, like, from all this, like, we have so much headspace filled up with, like, oh, yeah, that sounds like Haunting Misery. And you're like, you know, when's the last time you thought about that card? You know, like literally, like, 1999, like, it's just, or 2001.
And you can actually, like, rattle off the casting cost, whether it's an instant sorcerer.
And the art was done by, exactly. Yeah. It's just
go back to high school and be like, why the fuck did I learn calculus? This is the shit I needed to know.
Exactly.
So I don't know how many.
I mean, the art is such a key aspect to that, and that's why I love all of the pre-modern art just in general. But the fact that, like, we play the webcam, and you can tell just from the art, even when it's blurry and from someone's you know, SD webcam, you can still just tell by the art exactly what they're playing.
Yep.
Right.
That's why I'm a big fan of doing the original arts, is because those are easier to see for a lot of people, and they you know, connect with people more. You know, whereas
I mean, it's a visual game,
very much so. I mean, I'm going to recognize this, you know, a sixth edition Sulphur Springs, absolutely, because, you know, the card's, you know, 20 something years old, also.
Yeah,
but that's the same thing.
But like, but it's basically. But I still like my dude in the
hot tub,
hanging out in the hot tub, and, you know, with his the Foglio art,
the man titties. Yeah, so.
His breasticles. cool. Anything else about the deck you guys wanted to ask, or anything you wanted to add?
No. The only other thing I had was, did you ever feel like you needed Tormod's Crypts yourself? I noticed those weren't on the board.
Conspicuously absent.
Yeah.
Like I said, I built my sideboard pretty quick, and it's funny because my friend that I got into this format, and the only friend I have that was like actually playing, I got a couple more to start playing, maybe in the monthly starting next month. But he's playing Reanimator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, it didn't even cross my mind that somebody besides him might play Reanimator and kill me.
Oh yeah, there's a few people that'll play that.
He started 0-3, and he's like, I've been Tormod's Crypted every match. And I looked at my sideboard, I was like, oh, shit. I hope nobody...
I hope I don't run into
hops a Neshoba out of the grave, because I am very dead.
I played it back in... was it June? Yeah, I played Reanimator, and I was 1-4. It was just like, I ran into every Tormod's Crypt that existed. It was just not... It was
yeah,
not
apparently... So everybody but me has that card in their board.
Yeah.
I got super lucky.
Yeah, with Survival, Running Around, Reanimator, other decks, it's Replenish, all those things. It's like it's become ubiquitous in a sideboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just so many graveyard strategies.
It's just a question of how many slots do you take up? 2, 3, 4?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that, I think the fact that I didn't, like, so that was my first monthly. I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, played this deck. And I think the fact that I still won despite all of these speaks to the power level of Duress. Mm-hmm. Duress is by far the best card in this deck, besides Insidious Dreams. But, like, Insidious Dreams is a specifically good card. Duress is just broadly amazing. It just does everything. Like, I didn't need to know that much going in, because Duress really told me everything I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah. All right, I guess I gotta find a deck to put Duresses in. I've had my play set, and I've yet to actually play them in a tournament.
Should I make black?
I mean,
make black green enchantress. So, It's the only combo I haven't done yet.
Yeah. So, like I said, David, I did sleeve up this deck, and I've been having fun with it. I've only played a couple matches so far in a little small tournament that I found online. But I do really enjoy it. Being able to just Draco somebody like out of nowhere is awesome, especially when they don't see it. You know, when, you know, especially game one when you're just like, oh yeah, here it is, I win. You know, it's great.
Yeah. But
I've been really enjoying it. I think it's a great Phyrexian Arena deck, which is one of my favorite cards from, you know, the yesteryear. And I think, and I've really been enjoying it. So yeah,
cool. I'm glad.
I think it's a good start. Yeah.
Nice. Well, we kind of skipped right over our pickups and brews that we were going to do. Anyone want to jump in?
Oh, okay.
Tell us what you've been up to.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you guys what I'm playing this month that I'm 0-2 with.
Alrighty.
Sitting right here. So I played a Heartbeat combo a lot.
Heartbeat.
It's a mana flare, basically.
Okay. Heartbeat of Spring, right?
Heartbeat of Spring, yeah, there you go. I couldn't remember the rest of it. I was call it Heartbeat for so long. But my deck is Mana Flares, Early Harvests, Frantic Search, because I thought this card was banned, and then when I looked at the ban list, it in fact was not.
It was one of the, we actually came off, you know, it came off around the same time. The same time.
Yeah, roughly the same time, I think.
At the same.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. I didn't even know it had been banned. Well, that's good timing then.
It was that and land tax were banned originally, and Bargain wasn't, and then they switched it like a couple of year two ago,
right?
I think.
And
yeah, but anyway.
I've got Veteran Explorer and Cloud of Fairies. They both kind of serve dual purpose. I want as many lands in play as I can have. Primal Growth, which is another sweet plane shift card. It's a rampant growth for one more mana, but you can sack a guy and get an extra land. So when you...
So you can sack Veteran Explorer to get even more land?
Yeah, and they also come into play untapped. So when you sack Veteran Explorer, you get four lands untapped. And I play Diminishing Returns, which is a Time Twister for one more mana that exile the top 10 before you draw your 7. Which you would worry about removing your win conditions with that card, but there are no win conditions in my main board because I'm just burning wishing for Karavex Torch.
That was fun. I was like, what the fuck's going on here?
Oh, we did play. Awesome. You had your Aura of Silence.
Yeah.
How big has the torch gotten up to?
I played against a friend of mine, and I think I torched him for like 56 or something ridiculous.
Oh, that's awesome. Because you keep like tapping, untapping it with a
getting multiple mana.
Like Frantic Search. Yeah. And you can actually get, there's a Nostalgic Dreams that I can also Burning Wish for that I had wished for and got like 3 Early Harvest back. Oh. And just, it was...
That's awesome.
But alas.
Karavex Torch, that's a good one.
I am definitely 0-2. Jens destroyed me again and I lost to Mono Red. So.
Yeah, that will happen.
Mono Red, the fun police.
Yep,
it really is.
Pretty much. That's how I felt. I was like, man, I want to be Draco Blasting you so bad right now. But instead I have... Yeah. These awful cards in my hand.
I beat you so hard with my other deck.
Yeah.
But, you know, it happens. How about you guys?
I'm in the monthly two, and I'm 4-1 right now, and waiting on one last match. So I'm actually playing the blue-white-black Stifleknot list that I mentioned, I think it was last episode.
Heck yeah, that's a brew all and, right.
Yeah, it's... I love the deck. I think I got it down to like 2 or 3 cards that I want to tinker with one more time. But I feel pretty good about it, and it's just satisfying to be able to, you know, drop a big stifle, you know, dreadnought on turn 1 or 2, and say, and I've already got an idea of what's going on in people's hands, and disrupting it with duress, like we've talked about, and you know, Meddling Mage, and like I've just been having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. So. All this talk about how good duress is, I was thinking about your brew and like. The combination Duress, Peak, and Meddling Mage. It's just awesome. Like so good.
Eight ways to look at your hand and, you know, the Meddling Mage to lock a piece out or to Duress to take the piece away.
Yeah.
And not to mention the Mage protects the, you know, protects my combo and it can disrupt yours and it can also attack for 2.
Yeah, because they all have, like, they serve other purposes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love Pakula. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. He's freaking awesome. Great.
Yeah, that's what I've been playing. So hopefully I can finish off one more match and then, you know, make the top 8 and then make or top 16 and hopefully make a run with it. Mm. So I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good with the deck. I really like it.
Nice.
So,
Andrew, yeah. You got anything?
Right now I just got an order that's coming in Friday that's got like Flame Rifts and Obliterates and Blazing Spectres. I think I get 4 Blazing Spectres for the price of 1 Explosive Vegetation. And other fun things. I'm, 2-3 this month at the moment. I just have 1 match left with Kim Carl Pfeiffer. But I had, I played against a mono red and had, the first game, it took him a while to get going. So it's like, okay, sideboard, I'll be able to figure this out. Pull a hand that's got, Oath, Enlightened Tutor, something else action-wise, a Petal, an Island, and 2 Chills. And I'm like, holy crap, that's awesome. So I'm on the draw, so I'm like, okay. No, I was on the play. So I played out the Island. I didn't have to worry about losing the Petal, so it's like, I'll go one turn, see if I draw a land. If not, play the Petal, play out the Chill. Didn't draw a land, put down the Petal, put out the Chill, and he's like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, wait till you see the second one, buddy. And 13 turns later, I die without drawing any mana sources, so 20 cards, and all I had was a Petal and an Island. I'm like, oh my god.
The best hand against him, just don't draw another mana.
Yeah, I was like, oh. And it was a tease, like everything I drew was like 1 or 2 mana, and I'm like, anything, and I can cast a green spell if I draw forest. A white spell if I draw that. If I draw some other cockamamie color, I'll play with my 2 Kazi Cuss artifact. I was like, anything. Just give me anything.
As the rest of the red mage, I'll say, suck it, Andrew.
That is one thing I'm glad they moved away from is the absolute powerhouse color hosers.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What a ridiculous card Chill is. Just...
Yeah, Chill.
Oh, yeah.
The Pyroblast, Hydroblasts.
Yeah, they're so efficient.
They're so good.
Yeah, not to mention, Gloom, you know, is another one, too.
Yeah, Gloom.
Oh, like, that doesn't seem much fun.
Gloom.
But, like, yeah, so specific.
Gloom actually, pretty much makes me not want to play white in old school.
In old school, definitely not. Yeah, no, there's enough
Gloom. Even with cops. It's like it makes cops 4 to stop something. It's like,
you forget about that. Makes
the cops. And then when they changed it, they made it like, oh, let's just do all enchantments.
Yeah, all activated abilities or something.
No, all activated by white. Yeah,
so silly.
That just cripples that card. Geez. I did get somebody else though with a with instead of chills, it was sort of semi mirror matchy, but I got a choke and a back to basics against him. He ended up getting rid of those, I somehow finally got a chance to get my deck shuffled back with the guy's blessing, and I ended up drawing one of them, timed down a bit, and then I drew into a defense grid with him having only 3 mana open, so I could defense grid and then follow. It's like you counter it or you don't counter, because the next card he knew I had was me being able to replay the back to basics. And his only kill at that point left was the 2 factories on board. So I was like, woo! Go stupid hate cards!
Yeah, talk about back to basics really quickly. It's just like, one of the great things about the format is how balanced the mana bases are. As far as like, you know, if you're playing a bunch of non-basics, you can be punished for that. But you can also be punished for like, you know, just putting wastelands in a deck that it's not going to interact with it at all. It's a fine line of like, when a fetch land can just get a basic land and how like, you know, balanced that is. You know, it really actually like creates a lot for as far as like the space and also I mean it's a constriction, because when you have a perfect mana with the fetch land and the dual lands, you know, it's definitely, you know, you just play 5 colors, no problem. It's really easy.
You don't run into the legacy problem of you know, like Stifle is insane against fetch lands and
exactly. Yeah, it's 1 mana Stone Rain, you know, instant speed Stone Rain or whatever, and like, you know, how balanced that actually is. And but like playing something like Back to Basics can be very good against some decks, but it's not, you know, you just throw it in anywhere. Like Blood Moon's not played at all.
No.
I mean,
I haven't played it myself, but I've heard people are underwhelmed by Back to Basics when they end up playing it.
That.
Just because, you know, even the multicolored decks are playing basics.
But like, I play red deck. I play red deck. Yeah. And like, you know, Price of Progress is either like a nothing or it's insane. You know what I mean? So like, but like, it's just like, I love the card, but at the same time, like, it's just that.
But I mean, I like for back to basics.
It means you can, like, either way you play, you can play around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, back to basics. If I put it in, I'm not generally putting it in against like land still and their mix of lands. I'm putting in it against like Doomsday decks. Or Terravore deck, things that are using sac lands that, or other things that are just heavy duels, because it's like those are effective. If I'm worried about the land base of land still, it's usually the creatures that are gonna, the main lands that are gonna be the problem. So I just play, which artifact is it? It's not Cursed Totem. It's the other one. Brain fart.
Grinning Totem. It's,
well, Cursed Totem's... that's a good flashback. No, Cursed Totem's for like stopping Baylos and stuff. The Sabo's Web. Yeah, Sabo's Web shuts down manlands big time. And replaces itself.
Card. Like, when you actually reread what Sabo's Web does, it's kind of insane.
They printed it to put a damper on Rishadin port, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
God, the oppressive port days.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even the same standard. Those were fine. It was like it was.
Yeah.
It was. Oh, Arcadian Mask was port and Invasion was web.
Oh right, it was web.
Yep.
And it was Invasion. Okay. I was thinking of Mirari for someone. That was an Odyssey, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Mirari. Yeah. Yeah.
That's Odyssey.
Very different.
Yeah. Very different. I just
So speaking of, while we're on the topic of lands, so when I came into this format, like, I was, you know, kind of on the outside looking in, and I was, you know, I was just brewing decks, and I had a thought, and I think the format would benefit a lot if we somehow made enemy color fetch lands legal.
Huh.
It would, but it's just like so inelegant. You know what I mean?
It is. So it would be. It would be, but
it's like extended with dual lands. It was just like, let's just throw them in. Not saying I'm like pro or against it, but because I played plenty of extended with
right. So dual lands. We're already like allowing these gold border proxies and stuff for all these other cards.
Yeah.
I thought about this a lot. Like, we could commission artists, or we could just have some art that's like magic art that hasn't already been used, and like make really high quality proxies that everybody could just print out that have old borders, and like, I don't know, I think it'd be really cool. But
I mean, there would be a lot of decks that would benefit from it. You know what I mean? Like, the Rock would have even better mana. You know, Dead Guy would have better mana. Blue Green Madness would benefit. You know,
I think it definitely would.
The Pink Prison would, like, they would. It would help a lot, and because like I just said, when they're getting basics, they're completely fair.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. You
know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to find an elegant way to do it if we do it at all, but I think it's unlikely. But at the same time, like, you know, I understand completely where you're coming.
It's not the first time I've heard the argument.
I completely understand where you're coming from with that, 100%. But like, this is also how I know you're in the community, because you're always thinking of ways of like, okay, we're a community and we can do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, you know, pretty much. Like,
we don't need wizards to tell us to do shit, so we're gonna think any way we can about how to you know, change our things up.
Yeah,
but yeah,
that's a really honestly, interesting thought. That is the first time I have heard that. And
really, yeah,
yeah, it's. I mean, it had occurred to me just thinking, because I generally play enemy colored decks, you know, two color enemy decks. But yeah, I think I'm with you, Jared. Like, it's just too inelegant.
Yeah, I would love it, you know, if it got, you know, caught wind and, you know, people made some changes. But I understand.
My brain went right to South Park because of the dirty hippies and everything that this deck had, and I was just thinking, like, how you were saying, do you do it for community? I do what I want.
I'll play my enemy fetch.
Like, yes, Carmen. I'll play my enemy lands. Fuck you. Do what I want.
An old bordered enemy, like Misty Rainforest, and I'm just going to play it next month and see if anybody says anything.
I mean, it is particularly, like, obvious when you're brewing a multicolored deck and you're trying to come up with the mana base, and it's just, like, so obvious. The difference in a shard and a wedge deck.
Yeah, and it's
where It's like a lot of the times, like for example, Rug is one of my favorite color combinations. Mm-hmm. But usually it's heavily blue with a splash of green and red. And without the enemy colored, like, you're not going to play Wooded Foothills.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it's...
No, definitely not.
It's such a... And it's not just, like, a tiny inconvenience. Like, it's such a... It's a glaringly obvious problem. And that's, like, I... Yeah. Man. So I was like, I was trying to figure it out, and I was like, well, it's just a community format.
I'm trying to think. What was the time, like, how many years was it
a
between?
A very long time. A very, very long time.
Well, not, but it wasn't as long as the Painlands when they made the enemy Painlands.
No,
pain
it
lands.
Was about the same. No, because... Like, the gap between...
It was Ice Age to...
Ice Age to Apocalypse.
They make the,
I actually think it was longer.
That was 6 years. It was 6 years.
Yeah, I think that's a longer wait.
No, it was... No. It was about six 95 years.
95 for the original.
It was about 6 years for that.
Might have been 2002.
The original Fetchlands were Onslaught, which was in 2002. Mm-hmm. And then they came out in Zendikar, which was in 2010?
Yeah.
No, I think it was 2009 or 2010. I can't remember.
So it's more.
That's my missing years.
Slightly more.
All right, so we're not doing this then.
We'll see.
No, that is
David will bring it to the high table and let you know, as long as we get a seat at the high table.
Yeah, I know. It's like the year, the span is closer for us to add revised duels than it would be to
some old frame enemy fetches. There's a lot of cards in modern Magic that I would love to see in old frame. But,
yeah, that's,
you know,
that's what I'm saying. I would throw money at that. I would throw money at Steve Argyle to. Like hand, like acrylic paint. Don't use any of that digital stuff because,
oh yeah,
it's gotta fit the flavor. Yeah,
yeah.
Does Argyle have any? I'm trying to think of what, like arts he's done for lands.
I just picked an artist like Rob Alexander. Rob Alexander would obviously be the ideal candidate, but
he does so many lands.
Him and Poole.
I think he did. Did he a bunch?
Yeah,
of
he
the,
did a bunch of the fetch.
Yeah, bunch of the original fetches.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of the original Blue Lands, obviously, too. So
he did Underground Sea.
And Taiga.
Badlands and Taiga and one more. Can't remember.
No.
No, that was...
Yes, he did. That
was Jesper, I think.
Oh, really?
Savannah was Jesper, yeah.
Tundra was Jesper.
We'll figure it out. Anyway.
Well, that actually segues quite nicely into my pickups and brews because...
Oh, yeah, we're still in that.
I didn't actually have... Yeah, I wasn't going to let you get away. I didn't have any, but I had interesting related to pickups. First of all, I had the opposite of one where I sold a card on TCG Player and Unlimited Sarah Angel... And I'm going to see, all right, who am I sending this to? Flint Espel. Flint bought my Sarah Angel.
Oh, man, he could have just messaged you and saved you the fee.
Yeah, right? That would have been nice. Actually, shit.
Damn it, Flint.
I should have given him a refund and then just done it that way. That
would have been funny.
But yeah, so that was interesting. So now, you know, we'll have each other's addresses. We can be pen pals, that sort of thing. Cute. But,
that is funny.
I had mentioned on a previous one that I picked up the fall Mishra's Factory, which leaves me only wanting the winter Mishra's Factory. Mm-hmm. So to save myself $200, I actually altered my fourth edition to be a winter Mishra's Factory.
Nice.
Yeah, this looks great, too.
Yeah, I played it against Andrew, and that's probably the easiest... alter I've ever done because you're literally painting white over the factory and black over the sky.
That is pretty easy.
And then just, you know, a little bit of Christmas lights in there and a little bit of stars in the background. It was
very
quite
nice.
Actually, the hardest thing was the black bordering.
The border.
Oh, send those to me. I'm getting really good at it, man.
So what's your method?
What are you using, a paint pen?
I wanted to ask, what's your method?
Okay, so my method is pretty simple. It's I use a straight edge ruler,
okay.
And I use like a Sharpie or like a fine like
that
a kind of marker pen. A what?
It's that simple?
No, it's not that simple. Oh. It's so then I from there I'll take so I just to give myself a little border like around the edge, you know, so like from where I want to like because if you use the paint pen, it doesn't like, you know, give you a nice smooth like edge.
Right.
So I use the paint, you know, the finer point to give myself the fine edge, and then I'll take an acrylic paint pen, which is key, is because it bleeds in better, mm-hmm. and it looks really smooth after it dries. And you just then I use that and have a steady hand, but I've given myself the fine edge already, so I really just got to fill in the white, you know, so to speak, and then I just go all the way around it. I tape the card down and everything, so it's, you know, it holds steady, and you just let it dry, and it's been awesome.
There you go. So yeah. What I was doing, since I had the paints out when I was doing it, was I just took a ruler and painted, but it bled under the ruler a little bit. So
yeah, that's why you don't use the paint with the ruler,
right?
Because it will bleed underneath it. So yeah. That's why you use like the Sharpie that has a fine point and just go right along it and use it as a guide, but don't like fully, you know, put it in there.
Okay, I'll know that for next time, but I'm not.
Or just send them to me. I'm happy to do it for my friends.
I mean,
yeah.
I know I'm rolling up with conspiracy for X-Men arenas, but you guys are the real monsters.
No, the real monsters are the ones I've seen where they take like black bordered like workshops and make them white bordered workshops.
Yeah, that.
Like, oh my god. Oh,
talk about monster.
That's painful.
The reason I want to know is because I was just thinking about going back to our Basic Lands episode, how much I like the 5th edition art and hate the white bordered. Mm. And so like, what would it take? Like just black border those, you know.
Dude, send them to me. I'll take care of it for you.
All right, sounds good.
I got what you need.
Yeah. I'll commission these black border altars.
Absolutely, man. So.
All right, cool. Absolutely. Well, anyone have anything else to add? I think
One thing I've got left was it was pretty recent when we were doing the podcast and we were at. Literally, like, we started in January, late January, and we had somewhere around a little over, like, 400 people at the time. We hit 400 on December 13th last year. 3 months later, we hit 500. 2 months later, 600. A month and a half later, 700. And in the last, in less than a month, we had 100 new people join. Wow. And that was, as of yesterday, we hit 800, and we already have three more. So we're growing at a crazy pace.
Yeah, that's awesome. Called exponential growth.
Yep.
I think the more people
have nothing to do. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the more people that play this format, the more people they will tell. Like, this is an insanely balanced format. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think you get to see so many crazy
decks.
Yeah, and like you can just bring your own brews and like succeed. I'd never played in one of these. I don't even know what the format is, and like. This pile of Blazing Spectres got there. I don't know. Like this format's really cool, and I've been telling as many people as I can about it. I streamed all of my matches on my Twitch. I have a bunch of followers and stuff, and I'm putting it on my.
Oh, Twitter, I have to thank Jared for joining my YouTube. Just got that the other day.
Finally joined
Brewer's Paradise. I mean, there's plenty of people who just start the format, decide they want to play their own thing, not net deck it. Yep. End up doing really well,
but we're actually going to start a kind of a YouTube channel thing. It's called the Pre-Modern Postmortem, and I'm making the graphic for it in Photoshop right now. But I will ship it to you guys at some point, and hopefully we can grow it even more. Like I think a lot more people need to know about this format.
Yeah.
What's your Twitch?
It is. twitch.tv/Tavern of Souls, which was
Tavern of Souls.
Yeah, it was our original idea for a YouTube channel. It was like a play on words of Cavern of Souls, but
yeah
of course
we were gonna drink and like talk about magic, but that never really took off, so
just drank.
You got the handle. All right. I guess unless there's anything else, I think we should put this one to bed.
Sounds good.
Thank you guys for having me on. Right. It was actually a lot of fun.
No, thanks for joining us.
It was
a pleasure.
It was just a super interesting deck, and loved hearing about it. Jared, you got to play it. I might end up sleeving up something like this because it's very cool.
I dig it, man. I definitely dig it.
Awesome. Thank you.
To all the listeners out there, have a good one.
Take care.
Yeah, I'm sleeping.